reason, I've never been that crazy about election films. While it seems an enticing premise filled with drama and excitement, for the most part, they tend to fall flat on their fucking ass. Maybe it's because the scope is, like, incredibly narrow. It's always about two sides of some boring ass race. One side is either gonna win, or one side's gonna lose, and it's like, who gives a fuck? That being said, there are occasionally political movies that I do find kind of interesting. One is a 90s movie. No, smartass. It is not Election by Alexander Payne. Election's way too fucking good for this show. No, actually, the one I was thinking about, it sticks with me because it was this weird, dark comedy about spin doctors trying to steer an election their way, no matter the costs. And the costs are, to my memory, like crazy fucking high. That movie is Wag the Dog.
Welcome, fellow electors, to The Holdup. Each month we pick a movie one of us remembers fondly but hasn't seen in years, watch it, and decide, does it hold up? I'm John Nelson.
And I'm John Longinot.
And hey, everybody, guess what? It's 2020, election year.
Ooh, it's a chill end of the year, Mr. Nelson. My soul is not yet crushed.
It's just going to be yet a normal, boring election cycle. Nothing is on the line.
You know, I think normally we don't do this, but we should probably let them know when we are recording this, because at the moment, it's sort of like early to mid-October.
Yes.
And our dear commander-in-chief is has come down with the COVID.
Has hit the vid-19. Yeah. Yes.
So for all I know, when we post this on November 1st, the hell will have opened up and demons are flying around. So I just figure for every fucking week, it's a new nightmare. So, you know, that's where we are at in this particular week.
Every week, something different happens. And so we could be like, shit, the president got COVID, everybody. Ha ha. But he's running around. And, you know, it could be like November 1st. It's like, sorry, he's dead. We can't even air this episode. So that's shit's not funny anymore.
Just,
all right.
Just thought we'd timestamp it. But to be clear, this is not an episode about the politics of today. We're merely watching a political film of the past.
Yes, but I would say, folks, if you don't like it when, you know, nobody's on your podcast, get all political in your face. I don't know how we're going to avoid it this time around, because we're so close to election time and it's a political movie. Much like The Last House on the Left, this is your trigger warning for politics. Abandon ship,
yes,
all ye who enter here. Or something like that. Okay, for all of those of you still with us, I just want to tell you, you can send us your tracts, your letters, your postcards, your manifestos,
your screeds.
You can send those to holdupodcast@gmail.com, or you can just simply go to holdupodcast.com, click a link somewhere in social media, type a rant against us, and be done with it quicker. What are we watching this month, Mr. Longinot?
We're watching Wag the Dog.
Wag the Dog. And I think we sort of both came up with this one.
Well, Nelson, I think you were sort of mulling over the idea of, hey, it's an election year. Last time we did Bob Roberts, that turned out so well. So we should, you know, lightning will strike twice and we should do this again.
I mean, it turned out really well for the movie. The movie was great. It's just that unfortunately it was way too accurate forecast of the years to come.
Which, by the way, was 4 years ago. So if you think about that, our Bob Roberts episode, which if anyone wants to go back and check that out, we recorded 4 years ago. So here we're still here, so I guess that's okay.
That's true. We weren't, you know, 100% sure we would be, so I guess yay world for holding in there by the fingernails.
I mean, it's doing the best it can with what it's got right now, but we're still pumping away.
America, fuck yeah. All right.
Nelson, you had mentioned wanting to maybe dip our toes back into a political film. And I think we discussed this one and Primary Colors a bit, and we ended up landing on this one.
Well, probably because I haven't seen Primary Colors, which, you know.
Right.
Yeah, this one actually seems more appropriate, and unfortunately, it also has the possibility of being way too predictive of things to come, because it would already be probably close, if my memory serves, because at the time it came out, it was already kind of frighteningly close. When was the last time you've seen this? Because we needed to figure out which of us has seen this more recently.
Sure. Well, interesting enough, I've only seen Wag the Dog one time.
Ooh, me too.
It was in the theater when it came out, which was like mid to late 90s. I don't even remember the year. I remember I was in high school.
It was 97 or 98 because it was near the end of the Clinton administration, but the Monica Lewinsky scandal had already passed, I believe. Okay. I believe.
How about yourself?
That was when I saw it, too. I saw it the weekend it came out and never saw it again.
Oh, so we have a very similar story.
Yeah, and I mean, I could tell you the log line of the movie, but stop me if you've heard this one before. I don't remember much about the movie, unfortunately.
I don't either. That's why I think this will be really interesting.
This is
I can't quite tell who remembers it enough to explain what it was, or I don't know.
Here's what I remember. I will try, and you can correct me as we
maybe
go.
Maybe between you and me, we'll get enough of it, of our vague memories of it.
Well, I know the log line. The log line is, like you say, it's, you know, political fixers and their candidate in an election year, I believe. He has some sort of like a sexual thing. I mean, because back then having a sexual scandal on your record could actually ruin you. Nowadays, I don't see how that could ruin you. But back then, that was a huge fucking deal, especially on the tail end of the Lewinsky thing. So their candidate does something stupid. He gets caught. And so they have to spin it so he wins. So the way they spin it is they basically start a war, is what I remember. The reason I remember that is because the movie came out at the same time that Clinton was, it wasn't a war, but he was, I forget exactly, he was dropping bombs on some, you know, Middle Eastern country, and people, and no matter what the rationale was for it, there were, you know, a certain number of people who were like, hey, this is like that movie Wag the Dog. They're trying to distract us from something.
Oh, I remember that. Was that while his impeachment was going on?
Maybe. That could very well be. Yeah. I don't remember.
I do sort of vaguely remember that as being like, oh, he's sort of trying to draw. Much like, you know, our current president is often attributed as sort of distracting people with crazy stuff. I remember that about Clinton. People were like, oh, he's trying to distract from his problems.
I mean, I gotta say, the funny thing is, like, I could see in the Clinton days that, oh, he's trying to distract us, he's trying to do some sleight of hand, like, hey, look at this over here, start talking about this, media, so you don't notice this thing over here. Everybody attributes that to Donald Trump, but the thing is, I don't think it's possible for him to pull that trick, because him doing stupid shit every week, it's like people say, oh, he's trying to distract us from the shit he did last week. It's like, yeah, but the shit he did this week is equally heinous. So, like, distraction from heinous shit, you know, with other heinous shit.
It's more like obfuscation by fatigue more than it is sort of look over here instead of over here.
I mean, don't look over here at all because you're sick of this shit. I mean,
it's interesting you talk about that strategy, because I think, you know, we can talk again a bit about what the movie's about. But one of my things I'm thinking is going to happen with this movie is potentially that, like, we've gone way beyond whatever happens in this movie. Like, the sort of tactics they're going to use, I don't really remember them, but like whatever they do to kind of pull one over, I feel like in this day and age, it's going to seem quaint.
Yeah.
Do you remember who the characters in the film were?
I don't remember the characters. I remember the actors, which is obviously Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman, I think in one of their first movies together. That's why it was such a big deal for everybody. Right. I don't remember who directed it, oddly. I keep wanting to say Barry Levinson, but I don't think that's true. But David Mamet wrote it. I remember that specifically.
I remember one other actor, and that was Anne Heche. Is also in it. Which she was in a lot of movies and then sort of like vanished from the earth, but this is sort of the crest of her like popularity in movies from what I remember.
Yes, that sounds about right.
And I always really liked her, so you know, I'm sort of looking forward to seeing her in a movie again because it's been a while.
I mean, I think the dovetailing of her career happened right about the time she did the Psycho remake, but I'm not 100% on that. You know,
wait, didn't take off. That didn't reboot everything.
That may not be causation. I'm just saying, remember what was out there in the time. But yeah, I don't remember anything about the movie. I honestly remember the stuff going on outside the movie more vividly because, you know, again, I was younger and I was out in the world sort of making decisions politically for the first time that had, you know, real effect on life and feeling like, oh, man, what's going to happen? And, you know, what's going to be the end result of this presidency? And, you know, are we doing stuff wrong? Are we back in the wrong? You know, just all this stuff kind of going through my brain. And the movie made me think about it, but I can't remember the movie vividly enough to tell you anything.
There are a couple things I do remember beyond that. So maybe I can help pitch in a little bit here. Where so if I remember, it's like Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, and Hayesh are kind of. I remember a lot of walking around drinking coffee, looking at monitors. They're in some kind of control room where they have like all the news media up on televisions, if I remember.
Right.
And I it makes sense that, you know, Mamet wrote it, because I think a lot of the movie is them like watching the sort of political theater going on and coming up. It's almost like you're a fly on the wall watching them like come up with crazy ideas or ways in which they can spin things their way.
Right.
I mean, they're literally spin doctors. They're there to sort of, you know, change the flow of the conversation to help their candidate.
Right.
And yeah, like you said, I think there is some embarrassing thing going on. I can't remember if it is a sexual scandal or something else. We'll obviously find out when we watch, but that's like 95% of the movie is like them talking about what's going on and how to fix it, coming up with crazy plans, enacting those plans, and the title Wag the Dog sort of coming from the idea of like, you're controlling it. It's like, the dog's not controlling the tail.
Right.
The tail's controlling the dog.
Yeah.
You know?
Does the dog wag its tail, or does the tail wag the dog? Right.
Right. Exactly.
I remember Dustin Hoffman saying that in like one of those EPKs they had at the time, but he said it in a real like, you've never heard this before. He's like, does the dog wag the tail, or does the tail wag the dog?
But I think the idea that like these three douchebags drinking coffee can concoct a scheme. Throw it out there, you know, let's call them Carl Rove or whoever they are.
Right.
And sort of like totally change the vibe going on. There is one other major thing I remember that if you don't, maybe I'll save that for later. It's towards the ends of the movie. So rather than dive into it, we can discuss it when we come back.
Okay.
The reason I remember it is because the movie by and large is pretty lighthearted. It's
right.
Sort of a comedy, or I mean, it's a dark comedy. Like obviously what they're dealing with is serious, but I remember the movie being fairly just kind of funny and not terribly serious. So I remember pretty vividly that the movie starts dealing with things that I wasn't necessarily expecting it to.
Mm.
And that sort of stuck with me. Not that this movie is the best example of it, but just this idea of sort of like, doing unexpected things in movies that seem to have one tone and suddenly have a different tone or something like
right.
that.
I
find really interesting. Yeah, yeah. So it's sort of. I mean, it's sort of a character shift, sort of a tonal shift. But it's like when, you know, I'm trying to a movie like maybe Network or something might have a similar vibe where like
right.
it's seemingly kind of silly and funny, but then can leave you really like. Thinking about things and like
right.
oh that wasn't just for goofs, like this actually kind of had a point, or you know, something like that.
Well, that was the thing about that movie that it felt like it was aiming for a Network. It felt like it was aiming to be like, oh shit, you see what we
yeah.
did, huh? Pretty smart, huh? And my fear is because it was so like in the moment, so at the time, that we'll look at it now and like you say, it'll just be like, well, yeah, that you hit it at the exact right moment. Because like I say, people were mad at Clinton for whatever he was doing at the time, and they kept citing this movie. It's like, oh my God, this movie just came out of nowhere and you know, and told the truth about Clinton. And it's like, well, this movie's been in development for at least a year and a half or two, because that's how long it took to make movies around then. So they had to have been planning to make this movie for a while. Maybe they based it on Clinton, but I doubt it, because it's like by the time they make this movie and it comes out, it's like, well, how could they guess what's going to happen in a year or two? So,
yeah, my read on that is sort of life imitates art, art imitates life. Like this is politics. Skeezy, gross shit happens in politics all the time.
Right.
It's applicable to almost any scenario. I don't know if the movie's overtly like in neon letters screaming Clinton, 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 but obviously that's what's going on at that time. It sort of serendipitously hits at the same moment Clinton's in his own scandal.
Right.
You know, I can't speak to the movie's point of view as like a direct response to Clinton or just politics in general. Whereas something like, you know, obviously we're not watching this movie tonight and you've never seen it, but Primary Colors is a movie that's quite overtly kind of doing Bill Clinton.
Well, right. Yeah. Because Primary Colors was written by someone in the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
No,
yeah. They might as well call him like Clil Blinton or whatever. Like it's like that movie's like just really obviously Bill Clinton. Whereas right. this movie, like, you know, it's not like some fake Bill Clinton walks in with a cup of Joe. It's like these three spin doctors. You're not even really with the politician who's being discussed. You're with like these sort of mid level, you know, media people. To your point about network, I think what's interesting is, if I remember, Wag the Dog is sort of evoking the time it's coming out in. It's not like super exaggerated. Like, it's very, very realistic. I mean, it might be played for laughs or something, but I don't remember anything in the movie being completely crazy. Mm. Whereas Network is like many decades ahead of its time in predicting the future. It's throwing a Hail Mary to like a crazy future that unfortunately has now been just straight up eclipsed and almost outdone by reality.
Right.
So now it's funny. You watch Network now and that movie's fairly quaint. Like, oh, wow. This actually isn't that bad. Like, maybe we should be here. Whereas like when it came out, it was nightmarish.
Yes.
Whereas Wag the Dog, I don't think is predicting some distant future of horror. It kind of its time.
Right.
And it'd be interesting many decades later, like, does it still play today or has its time just kind of passed?
Right. Well, the interesting thing, too, like sort of behind the scenes, I think this is about the time that David Mamet himself was sort of slipping from, you know, liberal to conservative. So I don't know, this weird turn that it's like he's gone from being kind of whimsical to kind of lectury, I guess. He's not the man who wrote The Untouchables, is what I'm saying, John Longinot.
So, well, certainly. So he wrote this but did not direct Wag.
I don't think he did. I the name that keeps popping up is Barry Levinson. If he directed it, then I'll like give myself a pat on the back, but I don't
watch
think
it be
it's
like
him.
David Mamet didn't even write it. Like, watch that happen.
Yes,
like,
that will be hilarious. And I'll
and
have to go back
all this Mamet talk is like for nothing.
That'll be I actually hope that he didn't write it. I hope I'm so completely wrong about this that we come back and it's like, oh no, George Lucas wrote it and in a weird turn of events.
But I find it really interesting that because here's the thing, I really enjoyed this movie when I saw it. Like, the reason I chose it was I remember really liking it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel the same, but I do find it interesting that we like nothing much stuck. Like, I couldn't tell you, like, hey, remember this line, this scene? Like, I got really nothing there.
That's the crazy thing is I came out of the theater, and I remember coming out of the theater more than I remember watching the actual movie. And I remember coming out and going, oh, that was good. I don't remember, like, losing my shit over it. But I do remember that, like, oh, yeah, that kind of, you know, it held up to what it advertised, you know? It was like it stuck the landing, and it's like, oh, okay, that's pretty good. Because there was another, I mean, maybe it was Primary Colors. There was some other movie that came out around the same time, tried the same thing, and just utterly, like, didn't work out. But it was more of a comedy. I can't remember what it was, though. I don't even remember what, again, I don't remember exactly what year this was either. It was like 97, 98. I'll have to look it up.
It's Wayne's World.
That's the very one. That was exactly what I was thinking. No, it was another political movie. I just can't remember what it is. Maybe that's the one. Maybe Barry Levinson directed the other movie that didn't work out.
That,
and then I keep
Mamet
assigning
wrote.
And then Mamet wrote it. That's going to be so awesome when Mamet didn't write this one. See, that's why we do this, folks. So you can feel superior to us and you go, no, you assholes. It was fucking George Lucas.
Watch this be like a Robert Redford film or something. Like, we're just like totally off.
No, he already did his political film, though. He did The Candidate.
That's true.
Right? Didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was. Yeah, yes. He did do that. You are correct.
A movie I have not seen also, but sounds suspiciously
okay.
Like. Yeah. That sounds. That's the. If you were to pitch like 2016 to 2020, that would be what it sounds like. It's like, oh, some joker that they picked up off the streets takes his whimsical journeyman blue collar talk and wins the White House and wrecks everything.
Well, the other thing about, and this is what I mean about political films being kind of boring at times, like they're almost always just a shell sort of reflection of the times, right? Like they're always so overtly like taking a known political situation and sort of making it fictional for a movie, but kind of not really.
Well, what political movies would you say are your favorites?
I mean, well, does election count?
of course election counts.
And now that one, absolutely. Like, but that,
yes,
but see, 100%. That's what I like about that movie, because it's not, you know, it's a totally different story about, you know,
right.
like a teacher and a high school kid.
Yes. But yeah, absolutely, that can count.
But yeah, political movies, I mean, well, here's the, I mean, political movies, that's such a general statement. Almost right. any piece of art is like inherently political to some nature. So we're not talking about political statements or political whatever. We're like talking literally politics, like politicians
like front
in a
and
movie,
center.
Front and center.
Oh, I was going to say, like, Killing Them Softly, you could look at as sort of a political movie, and we like that one, yeah. so.
I mean, call me predictable, but All the King's Men is good.
Ah. What about All the President's Men?
Excuse me. That is the film I meant.
Oh, okay. Well, because they're both political, so.
Yes. I was thinking of All the President's Men,
ah.
and I said All the King's Men.
You know what actually is kind of more appropriate for our times is Facing the Crowd. That one, the... Andy Griffith one? Oh, you've never seen it? Oh,
nope.
Shit. Do you want to see Donald Trump predicted 50 years early? Watch A Face
sure.
in the Crowd. Holy shit.
I tend to, for whatever reason, politics as a movie, I tend to just not even watch them. Like, I've never
right.
seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Mm. I've never seen any of these, like, major... I'm trying to think of other big political movies. I can't even really think of any. That's how little
well,
they stick out of my
yeah,
mind.
I'm thinking of like the to me the best political movies are like the ones like Killing Them Softly where it's sort of a background thing.
Sure,
like
sure.
Shampoo is one of those that I like. It's like it's, you know, Nixon's being elected in the background, but it's not, you know, in the foreground. Actually, you know what movies I do like that are political films is documentaries. Now that I'm thinking
sure.
about it. Like The War Room, Primary, there was another big one, you know. Fuck, I can't remember what
Fahrenheit 9/11.
No, no, not Michael Moore. I said documentary, not a fucking Inquirer essay for liberals. No, thank you. And
fair
I like
enough.
His movies, but good lord. I mean, anyway, I guess this all begs the question, Mr. Longino. Do you think, given our superior memories of this movie, do you think that Wag the Dog is going to hold up?
Oh, man. Not to make a big thing out of this, but I think this is one of the hardest wagers I'd ever had to make, mainly because I remember so little about the movie, but I do remember enjoying it. And that coupled with the sort of time and place nature of it that I'm anticipating, also with our crazy political theater we're in now, it's almost like any political movie prior to the last 4 years is going to seem like... nothing like,
yeah
compared
oh,
to
they're
the
speaking politely to each other yeah
yeah
well, yeah
I mean we're just in a hell of a time so my logic brain is sitting here telling me to say that it's not going to hold up just based on a general feeling of time and place. I think it was a pretty good movie in the 90s when it came out. I really enjoyed it. It obviously didn't stick with me enough for me to go, oh my fucking God, let me make room on the Blu-ray shelf for the amazing movie Wag the Dog. Like, I never watched it again. So
neither did anybody else, apparently. We went to try and get this movie to watch it, and it's not available on DVD or Blu-ray. So
this is either like going to be a ho-hum, like, well, this came and went and it was what it was and it was okay, or it's like, my hope is there's some kind of hidden gem here
right
that we're not aware of, but I think by all reasonable logic it probably will not hold up.
I think I'm going to agree with you on that one, and I'm not going to, this isn't like it's going to hold up because it sucks. I'm going to guess it's like, it's technically proficient, there's a few laughs throughout, but I mean, like you say, if it was really good in the time and place it came out in, it may not be as good now. And I'm just guessing, again, my also lack of seeing it since then means, it's probably not a hold up. Probably not a like, oh God, how can anybody like this movie? But it'll just be like, yeah, doesn't really light my fire anymore. But being as the level is so low, I mean, maybe that'll count for something and be like, oh my gosh, this is actually sort of good.
Well, this does fall into that interesting category of, I'm like, I kind of remember liking this movie. I don't remember why.
Right.
And so it's sort of like, part of this is almost like a investigation into like, why do I like that movie? I remember liking it, but I don't remember a goddamn thing about it. Let's go find out. It truly a hold up. Like, is this good? I kind of think so. I don't know.
I guess maybe. No. Well, who cares? All right. Well, sounds like a good time for us to go investigate. Let's take this bill to Congress and go watch Wag the Dog. We'll be right back.
There's a crisis in the White House.
What's the crisis?
And the president's top advisors have been called together.
Oh, jeez.
The sexual misconduct occurred inside the Oval Office.
With the election only days away, how much will this scandal affect the outcome?
The president spent the weekend pressing the flesh. He wasn't campaigning, he was dating, actually.
Now, Washington's top spin doctor.
We can distract the press for 11 days till the election. I think we got a chance.
Has an idea.
We can't afford a war.
We're gonna have the appearance of a war.
But he can't pull it off without Hollywood's top producer.
Do I know you?
We have some mutual friends in Washington.
Why come to me?
We want you to produce.
You want me to produce your war?
Not a war, it's a pageant. We need a theme, a song, some visuals. We need, you know, it's a pageant.
All the drama.
The president's gonna go to war with Albania in about 30 minutes.
Albania's hard to ride.
And all the effects of real war.
Okay, put the village behind us.
Give me some sound of screaming.
Without the casualties.
America has seldom witnessed a more poignant picture.
It's the same process with the last Schwarzenegger movie.
You're the man.
Albania, Albania.
That rhymes.
Sergeant.
Schumann, if I may, welcome to history.
How are you?
Anybody want a beer? Because I can party.
When it's cooking, it's cooking.
From Academy Award-winning director Barry Levinson.
When this goes national, I get to put it on my resume?
Actually, no.
What could they do to me?
They come home to your house and kill you.
Academy Award winner Dustin Hoffman.
This is politics at its finest.
Academy Award winner Robert De Niro.
How would you like an ambassadorship?
That's my payoff.
Hell, I just do it for a story to tell.
Oh, no, you couldn't tell anybody.
Listen, I'm just kidding.
No,
No, it's just it's a pageant.
It's a pageant, that's what it is.
Wag the dog.
When the fit hits the shan, somebody's going to have to stay after school.
All right, folks, we are back from wagging the dog.
Good old shoe. Good old shoe. Run this into the ground's what we're gonna do. I play it 20 damn times every scene.
Oh, my.
Good old shoe. Good old shoe. Whatever road you walk in. Good old shoe, stand up straight and proud the way he taught you to. And you might even get to heaven with a soul like that. Good old shoe.
Good old shoe.
Hello. Hey, John.
Before we get into it, maybe we should go back and revisit all the things that we said correctly and incorrectly. First of all, I was delighted and surprised to see Barry Levinson was the director.
Yep, you got it. We were giving you all the shit, but you were right. David Mamet also co-wrote the film, so you were right there too.
Yep, got that. I was incorrect about the timeline. I had said this was, I think, 97, 98 is what I gave, which was after the Lewinsky scandal. I guess this took place, the movie came out in 97 before the Lewinsky scandal broke. And then when the Lewinsky scandal broke, Clinton started dropping bombs somewhere and people said, hey, he's trying to distract us. Just like that prophetic movie, Wag the Dog. And that's how that went.
Yes. And he had dropped bombs in Sudan.
Yes.
He'd actually bombed a pharmaceutical factory in Sudan in August of 1998.
So, John, what was that movie we just watched about, Wag the Dog?
Well, I mean, we were our vague description of spin doctors doing their spinning of plates was fairly accurate. I would say the major things that we sort of escaped our memory was not only is Dustin Hoffman in it, but he plays a Hollywood producer.
Yes.
And so this is sort of the jokey premise of the movie is for reasons inexplicably unexplained, I guess, maybe just because it's funny. I don't know. Robert De Niro sort of enlists Dustin Hoffman, film producer, into his tomfoolery of just making shit up to sort of save the president.
You know what, and I would guess, actually? I would guess that this is semi-inspired by the Argo thing. You know, Hollywood producers
possibly
who help out politically, but for David Mamet, it's like, oh, I'm going to make that a big joke.
And well, this honestly had more in line to me with someone who would believe in, like, loose change or that we've shot the moon landing or something.
Right.
You know, oh, Kubrick shot the moon landing. That was more what this was like. It's just like Hollywood fakery is going to brazenly lie. I mean, they went as far as to involve multiple producers, tons of actors,
right,
go on a soundstage with a blue screen and fake like war footage and hire a psychopath to pretend to be yeah. a war hero.
Kirsten Dunst was the actress they hired.
Oh, yes. Kirsten Dunst was the actress. Willie Nelson's writing songs. It literally is like 100 deep of people involved in a mass conspiracy to trick the American people into sort of getting them away from the fact that the sitting president, who's up for re-election, has had some sort of sexual relations with, it seems like, a Girl Scout, or they call her a Firefly.
Yeah, it's a basically like a Brownie or yeah. a Girl Scout, but they call
but
her a Firefly.
He's basically had sex with a young girl, and that's obviously detrimental to his campaign. So in order to get that out of the news, they basically make up a war with Albania.
Right.
And enlist a movie producer and his many friends to try to come up with ideas of what to do to sort of distract. And ultimately, and this is the thing I was sort of dancing around before we watched the movie, the one thing I did pretty definitely remember, Dustin Hoffman's character, I didn't remember that he was a movie producer, but I did remember that he was struggling with like not getting credit.
Right.
For all the zany shit he was doing.
Right.
And the movie sort of explains it as like, oh, I'm a producer. No one ever remembers what the producer does. The world's got to know. And many, many times Robert De Niro's like, no, you can't tell anybody because we will kill you if you do that. This is top secret. You cannot tell anyone. And he's insistent that he's going to blab. So by the end of the film, he's ushered away by what seems like Secret Service members or
CIA or Secret
Service.
Well, it has to be Secret Service,
government
right?
agents, yeah.
Because the CIA are kind of their enemies in this movie, so it can't right. be them.
But he is murdered in order to cover up the fact that he was involved. And that was sort of the dark turn that I was not expecting. When I saw the movie, it just seemed like a goofy comedy. I didn't expect like one of the main characters right. to be killed by the end of the movie. I thought that was fairly serious.
Yeah. And I can see myself, you know, 20 odd years ago going, oh, man, yeah, that's kind of a surprising deep ending. And now I look at it and go like, this is like when Kevin Smith at the end of Clerks didn't know how to end it. So the original ending of Clerks is Dante getting randomly shot by a robber.
Right.
And very wisely, the powers that be said, take that shit out. Just end the movie. So and that's kind of what it felt like. They're like, hey, look what we're going to do. We're going to make it deep. Yeah, we just blew your mind, didn't we?
Right. Well, what's interesting is when I saw the movie the first time, I saw it as just kind of this farcical comedy that suddenly got serious at the end. Like everything that was happening was so ridiculous that I never took it that seriously on first viewing.
Right.
And then by the end of the movie, it was like, whoa, wait, is this got like really real? We just killed somebody. Is this trying to make some statement about the real world? And kind of knowing that that happens to him on this viewing, I watched it more like grounded, and maybe it's because we are living in this insane world where this kind of stuff is like fairly commonplace, but the level to which they were faking this stuff and the amount of people they involved, when they kill Dustin Hoffman, my brain is like, well, your job is not done. You have about 99 more people to kill.
Right.
Because
well, that
there's
was
no
what I...
universe where this is going to be covered up. This is like so brazen and you're involving so many people. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, the fakery stuff. People trying so hard to create a fake world is like, well, they're working way harder now than people have to. All that somebody has to say now, apparently, is just get on Twitter and say, hey, this is a thing that happened for reals because I said it. And then
right.
newspapers
right.
are up. And yeah, because that's what Trump does. He will say, hey, did you know Obama is a child killer? And then the papers will run with, Trump said he's a child killer. No evidence, no proof. And of course, the other conservative media will run with, Trump says he's a child killer. No proof, but maybe.
Well, it's interesting because this movie's both correct and like incredibly incorrect in its depiction of what's going on. Like the idea that information can be distorted and that the public or many people can sort of latch on to either lies or falsehoods or mistruths, I think is incredibly real.
Right.
Like that we see yes. that now happen all the time. And no matter what side you're on, everyone pretty much agrees that everyone's in their own version of reality based on what is being filtered to them through their media.
Right.
So I think the relationship between politics, media, and truth is very much something to be discussed, dissected, talked about.
Right.
So the movie's sort of right on that level of like, yes, there is manipulation and spinning and outright falsehoods and lies. Where it sort of loses me is the level to which they do things in the movie that are like totally unnecessary. Like, okay, so the idea is, oh no, we want to get this girl out of the news. Let's fake a war with Albania. You can do that without enlisting movie producers and going on a set. And by the way, what they're showing me in the movie is the fakest looking shit I've ever seen.
Right.
Like they, Kirsten Dunst, the actress, running around on a blue screen set where she's holding a bag of Tostitos chips. And then the movie proclaims through like movie magic, they can hit a button and on the fly render her holding a white cat. There's this whole scene where it's like they've got this palette of choices and they're like, okay, let's put this building in the background. Let's put this fire here. Oh, the president wants they want a calico cat. Oh, the president wants a white cat. And they're pulling up images and just immediately like, oh, here's a calico. Here's a white cat. Oh, run. No, great. Now it's on the evening news and now everyone believes it.
Right.
And it's, I don't know if it's just because like maybe we're just not the right audience to watch this scene because we literally for a living do video editing.
Do so exactly like, what they're doing, which yeah, is like, and they're not putting in the hours of tedious like frame by frame reconstruction that goes into it. It's like, I understand doing that for like time, but at the same time, they make it look like it just is so easy back in 97. I'm like, we can't even do that now. Yeah.
Yeah. To like hit one button on a keyboard and bada bing, like a chips or a cat. And she's running. And obviously when they're taking that take, she's actually holding a real fucking cat and running around.
Right.
Like, that was just, it just sort of lost me where I'm like, oh, okay, this is a fantasy. Like,
right.
this is in no way realistic. I mean, I think the thing is, when I was young and in high school and watching it, I didn't think much of it. So this might just be sort of a pet peeve thing where I'm like, come on. I literally said while we were watching it, like, we have friends that spend hours and hours and hours in dark basements just to do the like green screen part.
Right. Just
let
the
alone
one,
like putting a cat in there. Like,
yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Well, this is like when my brother watches Better Call Saul. Shout out to my brother, Chris. He and I will talk about Better Call Saul. We both like the show, but he's like really, really hard on it for the legal stuff. And I'm like, dude, ain't nobody outside the
right.
legal profession gives two shits about the minutia of legal blah blah. All of right. us say, yeah, go Saul Goodman. So this is, I'm sure, the same thing. It's like nobody gives two
yes.
shits. It takes 12 days to do that kind of shit on a green screen.
You're probably right. I have a friend who is incredibly into medieval armor and weaponry. And any movie where they're wearing armor or have weapons, he's just like in a huffy puff, like, oh my God, this is so wrong. And I'm just like, dude,
nobody cares. Yeah, exactly.
I was like, it's armor, whatever. I don't care. So this might just be like, we're the wrong niche of people to watch this particular
yeah.
scene.
This to me reads as like David Mamet again, writing like a secret, like low key, like I'm really like jabbing it to the Hollywood industry because I got, you know, beef with the Hollywood industry as he always has. But back then it would have just been like Hollywood in joke stuff. And to me, that's like, that's fine. I don't actually, you know, mind it, but it is also like, it draws more attention to itself. It's like a Woody Allen thing where it's like, oh, isn't it clever? I'm biting the hand that feeds. I'm making jokes about this erudite like thing. I don't know. Something about it is like, it was funny enough, but there was also a point where I was just like, okay, am I watching this for the political commentary or am I watching this because it's a Hollywood commentary?
Right. Well, it also sort of overstayed its welcome, honestly. Like, I think initially those scenes with Dustin Hoffman were getting laughs out of us. Like,
yeah,
there's
they were
this whole
funny.
Thing. Yeah, he's like, oh, he hasn't read the cover of a book he owns, and he's talking, you know, all this. The big refrain from him, every time they're in a bad situation, he just kept going like, this is nothing. This
yes.
is not. We got this. Oh, this one time on a movie, this bad thing happened. This is nothing. And that was like the first time I heard it was like, oh, that's really clever. And then he said it again, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And then he said it like a third time, and then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is nothing. I gotcha. Then he said it a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, by the 12th time, I was just like, shut up. Like,
right.
I've heard this joke. It's the same joke the entire movie. And I get it. That's his character. But like, ugh.
The last half hour, and this is only like a 97-minute movie, the last half hour of the movie got much more sitcom-y. It seems like he said those first three, this is nothing. It seemed like he said bam, 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 like the three of them within the first hour. And you're like, oh, this is a recurring joke. That's funny. And then the last half hour, he said it all the time, and it's sort of like his sitcom zinger. Ah, this is nothing.
Not to mention they survive a plane crash.
Well,
somehow.
That comes later. But then they introduce this whole idea of like, oh, well, you know, the other presidential candidate has declared that the war is over because, of course, there's never a war to begin with. So he can just say it's over. And now they have to like cancel it because, oh, well, that's done. But then they're like, oh, a soldier got left behind. And so they dig out a soldier without checking his background for some reason. They've been so meticulous up till this point about like everything's got to be just so. So they grab Woody Harrelson, who is a soldier just on special forces or whatever. They don't check his background. Oh, surprise. Turns out he's a criminal. He's been in, you know, custody for 12 years. But they said, oh, he was the hero POW left behind in Albania. And then they put him on a plane and the plane crashes and they're all kind of, I mean, it just becomes this weird last episode of Seinfeld.
Did the pilots die, by the way?
This
made no fucking sense to me. They're like, okay, they're on a plane with Woody Harrelson, who's low on his meds. And you're right. It is very sitcom-y where it's like, oh my God, like he might kill us. You know, they have this whole joke about he raped a nun. Oh my God. Anna Hayes just like sketched out. And then they just cut to, you know, he's getting violent. Like, what are you doing here? Why am I here? They show the pilots like, oh no, in stormy weather. And then it cuts away to like a news briefing. And then it cuts back and the plane's in flames, wrecked on a field. The pilots and the crew of this plane are nowhere to be seen.
Right.
And it's just Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Anne Heche, and Woody Harrelson standing around, not a scratch on them.
Right.
Not so much as a speck of dust, just looking like they just came out of their trailer that was on the side, directly into the scene, and are just going, well, ain't this a thing? And then they're catching a ride from a farmer, and I was like, wait, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, is this Unbreakable? Like, this, right. Like, what happened? Like, are they miraculously alive? It was so weird to me.
I mean, that was one of the things that, like, it took such a weird, like, shift, because the first hour of the movie, they take great pains to try and ground everything. You know, Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman both are doing these, like, grounded performances. I don't know if they're, you know, realistic is the right word, but they're trying to make them as grounded as possible. You can believe, oh, this is a real spin doctor. Oh, this is a real Hollywood producer. As weird as he is, you've seen Robert Evans. He's not as weird as Robert Evans. So, you know, he still gets that, you know, suspension of disbelief. And then by the end, it's like, well, they're surviving plane crashes. They're, you know, Woody Harrelson is somehow a psychopath who goes around murdering everybody in sight. I mean, to be perfectly 100% honest, he was my favorite part of the movie. So everything he said, for whatever reason, just got a laugh out of me.
He
even
just
though
kept
it was
talking
just
about getting home for beans.
Like, well, it was such low hanging fruit. It was all just everything he said. He said it in a gravelly psycho voice. I gotta get home for beans. And I didn't remember he was in the movie at all. And then the second he reappeared, I was like, oh shit, this is one of my favorite bits in the movie, is when he's chasing some random woman that he's planning to do in or whatever, and he's singing, I like the nightlife, I got to boogie, hey now. It's just, oh man. But then it's so funny.
It got pretty Benny Hill there. It was a little,
I mean, he was hilarious, but he was sealing the fate of the movie for me, because it's like, he's taking me out so much, I'm like, I'm enjoying him, but the minute he disappears from the movie, I'm like, okay, now you're stuck in a whole different movie and you've lost me because of the thing I was enjoying so much. And it wasn't so much that, like, if you'd have kept him in, I would have been like, oh, this movie's great. But it was like, I don't know, by the, you know, from there to the end of the movie, I was like, well, this is just silliness now, because they tried so hard to make it real, and now it's like, ah, it's just a thing. Okay,
well, also what's odd is the movie tried to have these moments of almost like really hard satire that I think was meant to be played either for laughs or for sort of poignancy or thought provoking. And they didn't really work on me, I think, as intended. Like, two specifically that I remember were these sort of, I don't know, Live Aid movie stars singing. Willie Nelson is writing a song about the war, and they're doing just a very clear lift of the 80s, like Live Aid, with everyone going like, we are the world, we are the children. Right. But it was some other song. But like everyone there was like waiting for their SAG card, like random extras. Like they got nary a movie star in sight. So right. I was like, this is bizarre. And it was just so on the nose. It was like, I know exactly what you're parodying here. I know the exact song and thing. It didn't get a laugh out of me. It was just honest. And it stuck around for a while.
Yes.
Like they were singing that shit for like 10 minutes.
Oh, they were very proud of their music parodies. Yeah.
So that just kind of got annoying. And then they got really hung up on that old Shoe song. Like, so the whole thing was like, oh, the Schumann's behind enemy lines, and so let's fake a song in the Library of Congress, like an old record, and this will become the hit, the theme of Shoe behind the... And they just... It's an interesting idea, but there's just fucking like 20 goddamn minutes of the movie that's like Willie Nelson sitting down, writing the song, old Shoe, and then they play old Shoe 8 billion times. And like by the end of it, I was just like, it wasn't funny. It wasn't interesting. It's just like old Shoe fucking down my throat for like half an hour. Like I was just like, mix it up. Like I need another song or another scene or something. Like, it was,
you know,
weird.
The way you're talking about it actually makes me realize part of structurally what's wrong with the movie, which is they are trying to pile stuff on by the end. It's like, oh, shit's just spiraled out of our control. So it's just piling on, like, you know, oh, the Library of Congress song that we snuck in, or this or that, or just other thing. And just, but I feel like there wasn't enough piling on the one hand, but on the other hand, the stuff they're piling on is, like you say, kind of silly and you know, just repetitive. So, right. You know, I see what they're trying to do, but I don't feel like they're actually accomplishing it. It's like nothing feels piled on, I guess. So anyway. That's just a
screenwriter
101 realization I just made.
Right. Because if it was piled on, there'd be like 12 other things. It's not piling on to do the one note, you know, unless it's fucking Eyes Wide Shut. And it's just that's what this was in like satire form. Like it was just sort of like, it'd be like reading Gulliver's Travels and they're like, hey, he's tied down by little people. Scene 2, still tied down. Scene 3, guess what? We're going to show a close-up of him tied down. Scene 4, we're going to snap zoom on him tied down. And it's just like, dude, get to the next slide. Like, so it's, to me, it's not piling on if it's just the same thing like over and over again.
Yeah.
This movie could have been 30 minutes long. That's basically what I'm saying.
Like, yeah,
and then an hour and a half, it felt like 5 fucking hours long.
Yeah, it got to a point where it felt long. Yeah. It was a short movie, too. Like we say, it's like an hour and a half, and we're just like, oh, come on. Just end. And I don't know. Things just did not, like... Yeah, things just didn't spiral like I felt. I mean, again, we're seeing this from the modern day now. But I mean, but there was a movie came out before this, which was Bob Roberts. We saw that 4 years ago, and it scared the shit out of us.
Oh, yeah. It was like bone chilling.
And this one, where it's done by the, like, you know, and that was Tim Robbins kind of, you know, doing it on a low budget as kind of a lark. And this one, it's like, well, we brought in the heavy hitters for this one. We got Mamet and Levinson and De Niro and Hoffman, and it just sort of falls flat because it's like, well, yeah, that's funny and all, but...
Well, you told me something really that I think is illuminating, and the idea is that Barry Levinson shot this movie on a break from a big budget movie called Sphere,
yes,
which came out, I guess, a year or two later. And I even saw at the end of the credits we were watching, there's this credit that says, thanks to the cast and crew for finishing principal photography in 29 days, exclamation point. And I was like, 29 days, Jesus. And then I was like, oh, that explains a lot. Like,
yeah,
like it just kind of honestly felt kind of half baked. Like it needed more time.
Yeah.
And I think as we're discussing it, I'm sort of starting to realize why it wasn't working so much on me. I think every thought on its first time is fine. Even something like, okay, Dennis Leary's in the movie as this co-producer who's coming up with ideas, and he walks in looking just like Neo from The Matrix. Like,
right.
Like to a fucking T. Like
2 years before The Matrix,
coat.
So yeah, who ripped off glasses. Who, man?
Yeah, he was just straight in the movie. And he was great at first. Like every that was the thing. Everything's really good at first.
Yes.
You know, and it's totally working, and then it just kind of lingers, and you're right. And you're like, okay, yeah, I thought Dennis Leary was funny like an hour ago, but there's nothing he's doing now that he wasn't pretty much exactly what he was doing before.
Well, there was no depth to it. That's the thing, is I think all, you know, you think of like Anne Heche's character. She was the same way. At first, it's like you see her and she's sort of frantic and but you know smart, and you kind of get her character, and you're like, okay, well, I can see where later on they're going to dig a little deeper into this. Never did. She gets nothing. By the way, they start and end the same characters, which are pretty shallow. I mean, they're funny and it's fun to watch them at first, but they don't dig any deeper for them. So, yeah, they don't really go anywhere. So it's not really a character piece, even though they sort of want you to be invested in the characters.
You're right. I mean, there is almost no arc to speak of. Because even, I mean, like Dustin Hoffman, like scene one is like, I can't wait to tell people about this. And he's like, you can't do that. And then the final scene is like, I can't wait to tell people about this. And he's like, okay, I'm going to have to kill you now. Like, nothing, you're right. Like, nothing with him changed. Nothing with Robert De Niro changed. Nothing with Anne Heche changed.
Well, and I don't buy it. I mean, I don't, like, it doesn't, it's not like we get to the end and I'm like, oh, man, he's going to say the wrong thing to the wrong person. It's like, they have set up, he's intelligent enough to know that Bobby De Niro is not kidding. You know, he's like,
right.
He knows the stakes in this. And yet at the end of the movie, suddenly he's stupid.
Is like this suddenly like Donnie Brasco or something where like he's just choosing death, like knowing going out on principle or something?
I guess, but set that very up strange. And, you know, there's nothing to him just deciding, no, I want the credit. It's like, oh, suddenly now this is the hill you're going to die on when you knew exactly going in. I don't know.
Also, they get out of problems in ways that this is sort of my sticking point with the movie. I just have a hard time buying a lot of it. Like, okay, so Robert De Niro and Anne Heche are doing their bullshit, and then they get pulled over by the CIA.
Right.
They get
taken to El Cholo,
here in Los Angeles. William H. Macy walks in, it's a random CIA agent. Oh, no, they've been found out. They're in hot water now. What are they going to do?
Right.
And Robert De Niro, the idea of the scene is he's like the greatest salesman ever and sells them on leaving them alone. But, like, the speech he actually gives in the movie, I'm sitting there listening to, and it was basically along the lines of, like, what is war anyway, right? Like,
right.
Who's war? What's war? I am war. Let me go.
He's going to turn the CIA on its head is what he's going to do. And it's like,
And William H. Macy, for reasons I don't really understand, just kind of looks at him and goes, like, okay.
Ooh, touche.
And Heche is in the car like, oh, my God, you could sell ice to an Eskimo. This is unbelievable. You could sell anyone anything. And I was like, he didn't sell me. Like, I didn't. Yeah. That's what he said in the scene didn't make any sense to me.
Well, and they sort of undercut it by, like, immediately the CIA goes and wrecks their
right. Like,
their
it didn't even
thing.
Work.
But, it was still set up in a weird way that, like, I mean, the speech could have been way better to start with. It's like, oh, so we're supposed to believe that the CIA, in the time he was making that speech, decided, well, I can't mess with him now, but I know a way to mess with him. It's like, I don't know. There was something about that. It's just like, oh, this is the reality of the movie. And that was one of those things that I felt like the movie had actually been good at avoiding, like movie logic. I mean, it's a satire or it's a kind of a comedy or whatever. But I think to a certain point, they had managed to avoid the pitfalls of like, well, this is working because we say it's working. I think they were playing by the rules that they had sort of set up. But then, like, with that, they start to, you know, break the rules. And it's like, well, okay. So then what are we supposed to take from it? Because if, you know, if the stuff about, well, we're going to start a war to distract the world from, like, the president, you know, having sex with an underage girl, then, you know, you have to believe that that would actually work. I don't know.
Right.
There was a line in that movie that also sort of, I mean, unfortunately, not their fault, but it totally pulled me out, which is like, oh, my, because they were, you know, they think up all these different things. Oh, my God, the president has a sex scandal, the flu, and a war all in the same week. We haven't seen something like that in ages. And I'm like, we see that every fucking week.
I know.
Every it's week. Like, it's that level of just
hold our beer because we've been fucking living it for 4 years. Every fucking week's a madhouse. Yeah,
I mean,
totally.
Yeah, it just that was unfortunate. You know, that's the nail in the coffin for them. They just reminded us that, like, yeah, no matter what this movie comes out and says, it's not as awful and, you know, crazy is the reality that we're facing now.
it's also like the fakery in the movie is almost giving people too much intelligence and credit. Like,
right.
This whole idea of like, go buried in the Library of Congress. It's like, if you wanted to play old shoe, I could upload an MP3 right now, claim it to be some old song. It honestly doesn't even matter. And it would spread everywhere. Like,
right. And everybody would buy that.
You don't need that. You don't need all the subterfuge.
Yeah. It's almost, yeah. Like you say, it's almost like they give the American public not enough and too much credit
right.
at the same time. And I guess Dustin Hoffman got an Academy Award nomination for this one, which is
really, well, you know why? Because
it's a Hollywood thing.
Movie producer mm-hmm. talking about movies. He was one Argo fuck yourself away from an Oscar.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, other than that, it's like, yeah, the movie's technically proficient, but, you know, so what? You know, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
I guess we're at that point. I guess that's what we're getting to. John?
So what? Who gives a fuck?
So what? Who gives
what'd
a fuck?
What'd you think, John?
Hey, John, do you think this movie held up?
No, I did not. And I don't think that's surprising to hear, but I don't think it's a film without merit. I think it's a fine movie. But yeah, I would say based on my memory of really being into it and sort of surprised by it, I remember it leaving me a lot to think about.
Right.
And I found this time I was a little more, certainly more frustrated with it than I was initially. And I can't quite pin if that's the movie's fault, if that's the changing of the times fault, or whatever it is, here in 2020, on the eve of our presidential election, this all sounds like a lovely world I'd love to wrap up in a blanket and be in. Because, Wag the Dog Universe is just like, it's not even, doesn't even compare.
Somehow, Wag the Dog Universe is the good timeline.
It's that classic movie that has great ideas and a lot going on with it that could be good, but doesn't quite execute perfectly.
Yeah.
And therefore falls short. I can totally see why I never saw it again.
You know what I actually really liked in the movie? They kept running these commercials for the president, the president's campaign, and they were all the same, like, well, you don't change horses midstream. And they're all these terrible commercials. And Dustin Hoffman sees them and is so angry at them. And every time he just shakes his head, he's like, amateurs. And for some reason, I don't know why, because again, that's a sitcom-y joke right there. But for some reason, that one worked on me. Just the commercials being so, because they were the commercials of the time. I mean, those are exact replicas of the, and it's just like, they look like shit. They're like, who would fall for this garbage? And, you know, they're only a step away from the commercials we're all watching now. So it's like, why do we fall for this garbage 22 years later or whatever? So that I really liked. But I will agree with you and say this movie did not hold up for me, because I think time is a big one of it. And it's just, we've just escalated all the stakes, you know, through the roof in the last 4 years. And this movie could not have possibly predicted how it would seem stupid. That's the thing, is if they did Wag the Dog with Donald Trump as the, I mean, it would, no one would believe it. They'd be like, politics will never get this rude, politics will never get this stupid, the American public
wag
will
the
never
dick.
Yeah. You know, the American people will never swallow, you know, something that is just 20 characters that are tweeted out over the internet. No one's gonna buy that. And it happens every day.
Yeah.
Every fucking
day. I mean, if anything, this movie's legacy seems to be far more in the phrase people use to describe the idea of distracting from one issue with another.
Right.
You know, oh, Clinton's wagging the dog. Oh, Trump, you know, bomb Soleimani, he's wagging the dog. Like, that's how this movie's remembered, not so much for the actual movie.
Yes. Because back then it seemed like, oh, my God, you know, a child, you know, being molested by the president. Yeah, you need to distract the public real fucking quick with a war. The fact that they went to war with Albania in the movie is almost like it's not enough. You need to go with, you know, you need to go to war with, like, I don't know, Russia or, you know, well, Canada or something.
Exactly. Let me tell you about a fine Michael Moore comedy film called Canadian Bacon, which has the same idea that a president's going to lose an election, so he makes a war with Canada. And that, if we're going to go comedy, let's go all the way, is one of John Candy's last movies, and it's rather silly. But to me, I actually almost like that more, because it's so far-fetched and dumb.
Right.
It's almost making the same point in a more, to me, a more satirically funny way.
Right.
Because to me, satire, the more ridiculous you are, the better it works. This movie towed the line too much between satire and ridiculousness and realism. Like, it just could not decide if it was realistic or if it was satirical.
Yeah.
Whereas that concept, Canadian bacon, we're going to war with Canada, is obviously satirical and in no way realistic. Right. I think that makes for a better movie.
So you heard it. You heard it here first, folks.
Watch Canadian bacon.
Canadian bacon equals greater than Wag the Dog. I think that's a fine note to end on. I don't think we actually have a pick for next month, do we? Because it's like the world may be in flames in December.
I don't know. Okay, this month is November. In a few brief days from when you're listening to this, if you were listening to this when it first posts, we will have our presidential election. So what we do in December, let's wait and see what we need to do.
A nice Christmas movie to send everybody out of 2020 on. And this
Ernest Saves Christmas. Let's do it. Here we go. It's time. It's time to go back to Ernest.
I see what this podcast has become. All right. Well, if you have any ideas for what we should do in December, you can write us at holduppodcast@gmail.com or you can go to holduppodcast.com. Everybody be safe, go out and vote, and until next time,
nobody move, nobody gets hurt.
Don't promise anything.